Hi, my name is Jason Mathis, and my favorite thing is vintage syndicated game shows.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hi there, I'm Leah Jones. I'm the host of Finding Favorites. This week on the podcast, we are talking to one of my best friends from college, Jason Mathis. And honestly, this conversation is one of the first we've had since we graduated in 1999. We went to Millikan University and then got on with life. We've kept in touch digitally, as you do. He is the reason this whole podcast exists. I made my mind map of showing how I got from the West Wing weekly to how did this get made to admitting a fan group for Armchair Expert. And he saw that and he drew his own form of it, going from best week ever to Paul F. Tompkins and Paul Scheer. When he sent me that, I was like, this is an idea. Having people tell the story of how they found their favorite thing is an idea. So this is the second episode I recorded. We had a lot of audio problems, so bear with me. As of this week, I know how to plug my microphone into the computer and record through it. So I think things are getting better. Have a wonderful week and enjoy learning about game shows with Jason Mathis.
Today we are talking with my college friend, Jason Mathis in Boston.
No, I'm in Connecticut, close enough.
Did you ever go to Boston?
My wife's family is from Boston, so often we are visiting Boston. She is from Charlestown.
Okay.
So if you saw the Ben Affleck movie, The Town, that is where she is from.
All right.
Yeah, right by the Bunker Hill Monument. So, no.
Jason and I went to Millikan University in Decatur, Illinois together. And I think we might have, if we didn't meet at Millicamp, we met like the first week of Millikan. Is that
how you I did not go to Millikamp. I skipped Millikamp. Yes.
So you were one of the cool kids who skipped, like my sister.
No, I was a loser who wanted to stay home as much as possible before I like went off to school.
Oh, so okay. School was bad.
Did you have Pucholsky the first semester for humanities? Were you in that class with me?
I took like a sociolinguistics class with the woman who ran Study Abroad.
Ah, Dr. Shikiano.
Yes.
Do you know? Okay, so I was thinking of this. I was thinking all in the middle of the night. You know, I got paid to study abroad.
No, please tell me more.
Because my scholarship was worth more than the cost of studying abroad. So they gave me the difference in cash.
So you had fun in London.
Well, it was like a $1,500, but yeah, who didn't have fun studying abroad, you know?
$1,500 in 1998.
Is more than it is now, yeah. And we'll get to it in a second. I will let your listeners know how they can know exactly how much it's worth, because one of the things we're going to talk about in my map is
70s game shows.
We're going to talk about some of these game shows, and we're also going to talk about inflation, determining inflation, because there's a great, I'll do it now, there's a great website called New Egg or West Egg Calculator. I forgot to look it up, but I always put it in and figure out like when they win $7,000 in the game show. I'm like, how much money is that now? So I want to figure that out. So yes, but getting back to how we met, we were in Spanish together.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
That I just remembered that. Yes. Yes. And then I have a very distinct memory of you and your sister's car. You want to tell the listeners about your car?
What do you remember, the small blue Toyota Corolla, or do you remember the hearse?
The hearse. Who would not forget the hearse? And I thought that, and it was, here's the thing about their car, folks. It wasn't an affect, like some people who would own a hearse, it would be like, this is my personality, like in lieu of personality, I'm going to be quirky. It was just matter of fact that they're like, yeah, we needed a car. It was practical. It was for sale. And I thought that was the coolest freaking thing, because it was like, yeah, I'm driving a hearse. So yes. So those are like where I was like, we had Spanish together and you were a very normal, down-to-earth Midwest person. And I'm like, I like her. She knows who she is. And it's like you and your sister both. So it was like really good. Yeah.
So Jason, my twin sister Rain and I and Jason were all in the class of 99 at Millikan. And
go big blue.
Go big blue.
So you want to get into this?
Let's get into it. The way this interview is going to go is first, I want you to tell me what's at the center of your map. So what's the favorite thing you're going to talk about? Why do you love it? And then we're going to talk about, then we're going to explore the map, how you got there, where it took you, inflation, computers, all that good stuff.
So I have lived a very blessed and privileged life. So, and I've got to do a lot of cool things. We talk about studying abroad, right? I get to live in Madison, Wisconsin, which is one of the greatest cities in America, you know. But my one thing remaining on my bucket list is I want to be on the TV show Jeopardy. That is one of my life goals, and it has been one of my goals since I was a kid. So Jeopardy is the center of my map.
All right.
I love the game show. When it used to be on, I want to say 3:30, 4 o'clock Central. We're on Central time, so things are a little bit different for your East Coast listeners. We would watch it as a family and compete against one another to see who was the best. So Jeopardy is, I credit Jeopardy for my love of game shows.
Now, in your hometown market, was Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune back to back?
No, Wheel of Fortune, which I'm terrible at. You could give me the entire puzzle with one letter missing, and I would still be sitting there looking at it. My brain does not function. Jeopardy was an after dinner show, so 6:30.
Okay.
Because, you know, we dinner at 5 in the Midwest, yes, or whatever. Yeah, right. So, and I don't like Wheel of Fortune because I'm bad at it, namely. And the best part of Wheel of Fortune is, do you remember when we were kids, Wheel of Fortune wouldn't give out money? They would have the rotating Lazy Susan of prizes with price tags on them, and people would buy stuff.
You had to spend down your winnings by buying things from like a Wheel of Fortune wedding registry.
Yes, yes. And there was always a weird gift that was $28 or $42 that was a 6-foot ceramic Dalmatian. And people would always be at the end like, I guess I'll take the Dalmatian. And to this day, I still say that to myself when I have to make a terrible choice. I'm like, I guess I'll take the Dalmatian. So yes, I actually made rules about what makes a good game show. That's my Venn diagram. And I think Wheel of Fortune is a really good game. It's simple to explain. There's the play along factor, right? And the end, you got to build to a good climax, because there's a show that I really like that we'll talk about in a second that I think is a terrible game show that needs to be fixed. All right. And I got ways to fix that. But Wheel of Fortune, great game show. I'm starting to say, you in college, I was that hipster a-hole, right? You can go ahead and say that. Or I would like, you know, oh, I can't believe you like that. I've changed that my old age to Wheel of Fortune is just not for me.
It's a good, that is an important learning curve to be able to be like, it can just be not for me.
Okay. Also, I blame my mom. Shout out to my mom if she listens to this, because my mom is a Wheel of Fortune wizard.
Oh, so you were never going to win and therefore you didn't like it.
Yes, right. I'll go kick rocks, because my mom will be the one. Vanna White is still turning around the letters, and my mom will be like, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. And I would just be like, how did you get that? And she's like, well, there's 3 letters there, and there's 4 letters. And I'm like, okay. So yes. And my brother inherited that gene too. My brother is really good at Wheel of Fortune.
Have you taken the test? How far in the process have you gotten?
Yes. I've taken the test 3 times. And once I went to the live audition in college, we drove up from Millikan to Chicago. So the 4.5 hours. And I want to say Where's the Drake? Is that the one that's on the, is that on the lakefront?
It is. It's at the Lakeshore Drive curves going south, and the Drake is on that curve. It's very iconic.
Does it look a little bit like the apartment building from Ghostbusters?
Yes.
Okay. Then I took it at the Drake. I took the college audition at the Drake with the live tests and all of that, and I didn't get very far in it. But, you know, I was going to give up, and then the guy who the villain, because he's the one who's the gambler who started going all over the board to try to find the daily doubles. He hacked the game and figured out how to play the game. He had to take the test somewhat like 15 or 16 times to get on. And so that gave me like renewed confidence. So yeah, I actually got, I passed the test and got into the pool for a game show called, what was it called? I wrote it down. It was a trivia game that was on Game Show Network, and there was a British guy, like this hulking mass of a man. And it was, and he was like called the Beast. And I got into the pool with that. And that one really hurt my feelings because it wasn't about my ability. It was about me. Like they didn't choose me. Oh. So that was a really good, like, oh yeah, they just didn't like you. So
Jeopardy. Yeah. They want your brain and your thumb. They don't care about your personality.
Yeah, all game shows. I think all game shows want your personality in some regards. You got to be, you can't be dull on air. I mean, people are turning in to watch. So, you know, you need to be somewhat. I mean, they don't want like somebody from reality TV, you know, Real World seasons 8 or whatever, when it, you know, when that jumped the shark. But you definitely have to have some personality. So.
Sure. And I didn't, if that sounded like I mean you have a bad personality, that's not what I meant.
No, I mean self-deprecating, Leah. No, you like me enough to have me on your show. So, you know, that I'm flattered. So don't worry about that. So, all right. So you want to move on to the next part of the map?
Yeah. So Jeopardy, we'll just remember Jeopardy's in the middle. So
Jeopardy's in the middle.
Yeah. So walk us through the map.
The next line was the what I called 80s syndicated nightly, and that's where I put Wheel of Fortune, right? So the other area of the 80s is daytime 80s TV, right? And these are where you're going to get your big one. You get your Price is Right.
Yeah. And no whammies. No whammies. And no, that's not Price is Right.
That's Pressure Luck, which is my favorite show. You want to talk about Pressure Luck?
Yes.
Let's talk about Pressure Luck.
Okay? Let's talk about Pressure Luck.
Because everybody knows Price is Right. It's great. I do want to put in a plug. There's a great documentary about this guy who was on Price is Right about 5 or 6 years ago called The Perfect Bid. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, it's lovely. And you want to watch it.
Is he also someone who like hacked the...
Yes, plan? yes. He's a college math instructor who I also think probably is somewhere on the spectrum, who watched nothing but Price is Right and recorded the prices of things down and nailed stuff to the penny on the show.
Wow.
To the point where, I won't give away the end, but Drew Carey as the host, and then there's a lot of clap back at people or like backlash because he's not Bob Barker. Drew Carey has terrible politics. Well, I'm just to put that out there. I don't agree with him on that. But apparently is a really nice guy. And Drew Carey went to bat for this guy because they weren't going to give him the prizes for cheating. And Drew Carey said, all he did was watch the show. Isn't that what we want people to do? Right. He's a super fan. And so he defended him. But it's called The Perfect Bid.
Okay.
All right. So I also want to say at this point, like, I've been watching game shows during quarantine. We're recording this during the pandemic quarantine. And one of the reasons I think I'm watching game shows is because this chunk right here, daytime 80s, is sick debuting TV. And I feel like we're all home sick for 10 weeks so far.
Yeah, this is like a Jeremy Baramy homesick time.
Yes. So I think my like comfort brain has gone to like, oh, we should like watch game shows and lay on the couch. This is what we need to do. But also it stimulates your brain, but not in a overload capacity. Like you engage with what you're watching, That's why I think a lot, like my grandma used to watch Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune every day until she died in her 90s. And I think that was part of the reason she was, until the end, was very sharp, you know, like engaging in, there's a lot of research on that. I'm not a doctor. I'll let somebody else talk about that. But Pressure Luck. Do you know how long Pressure Luck was on the air?
It's either going to be a very long time or like 3 weeks, and it was just on repeat forever. And we thought it was forever. So I don't know.
It was 3 years. I couldn't believe that because, like, to me, you automatically went to like the no whammies things that like Pressure, like people our age say game shows, we automatically go to Pressure Luck, and it was only 3 years. So. Wow. For those of you not familiar, Pressure Luck is basically a, there's a lot of devices in game shows where people acquire things that they're going to later use in the end round. So this one, people acquired spins on a board that looked like, oh, I'm using my hands. This is an audio podcast. Now I see where people will always say that.
Why they say that all the time? A great visual for an audio medium.
Yeah, great visual for an audio medium. There are TV monitors, and we are talking like 1984 kids, look these up, like very awful TV monitors that are flashing around a square. So there are probably 10 on each side, and they're rotating through a series of dollar amounts or prizes, and these red things called whammies. And if you get four or five of them, I don't remember, you're out of the game.
You're out.
And yeah.
I think if we're looking at 80s mascot villains, the whammies were probably in a union with Denoid.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My favorite Simpsons line is when Marge tells the kids, that's the Noid, kids. Avoid the Noid. He ruins pizzas. So, yeah, I just say that out loud, too, sometimes. But, yeah, the Whammy and the Noid, if they're not in the same union, they are, like, in the same family. They are just in... And then when you got one, there would be a... was it stop motion animation, I guess they had to use, or something, cartoon?
It was like the 8-bit pixel animated, I mean, a whammy was like a furry little dude.
Right.
I think wore costumes, like, didn't they have kind of like a they wore like little top hats.
Yes. And they would have a theme. So there were like different ones you would get, and they would, sometimes they would sing a song or something. They would do something for comedic value and to indicate that they were showing up, and they were pushing the person closer to the end. They're running the game. Also, when you got a whammy, we should back up. Any prizes or money you accumulated to that point you lost. So the whammy was a bad thing to get. And then the game was won by the last person standing who had won the most money. And then there was some gameplay where you could decide if you wanted to use the spin yourself or pass it to one of your competitors. And hence the name of the game, Pressure Luck, is do you want to use the spin and Pressure Luck? So that's the origin of the game name. I would also like to say at one point, one of the things that I hit upon that I think is crucial in games is the returning contestant. Because I think like you might...
Most famously, the Ken Jennings.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But,
yeah, he's the ultimate in whoever this growth hack guy in Modern Time Jeopardy, whatever. Ken Jennings is the, I think, true star of the returning champion.
Absolutely. He's the pinnacle. But do you know about Pressure Luck's Ken Jennings?
No, I didn't know there was one.
Okay. So I looked this up this morning because and I'm going to recommend another documentary, and it's called Big Bucks. I want to say E Network did it. Remember when E Network did the True Hollywood Stories?
Yeah.
Remember those?
Yeah.
Okay. So there was this guy who was on there, and I thought I remembered this, and I wanted to make sure. He was an ice cream truck driver.
Huh.
And his name was Michael Larson. And the patterns on the TVs, again, using my hands on a great visual reference for an audio medium, the patterns with the TVs would flash. There would be a cursor. When you stop the cursor, that's what you would win. Well, he sat at home and recognized that there were only five patterns.
Oh.
And he memorized the patterns. So he knew when to push the buzzer. And he made a record for a game show. And I don't understand why they don't count Jeopardy winnings in this. But he won $25,000, which was the limit CBS had put on the show. So he was a returning champion. And then some dubious things happened to him later in life, but I'll let the listeners Google that or watch this really great documentary after him. Also, to back up to Jeopardy a second, have you seen the movie Quiz Show?
It came out in the 90s, right? Okay.
And it's the true story about the game show scandal of the 1950s or 1960s, where they were feeding this guy and the answers so they would have their Ken Jennings.
Right.
So Jeopardy is actually based off the idea. The reason Jeopardy, everything is the form of the questions, like you answer, like, you know, what is London, England, right? You know, is because the guy who created Jeopardy said, what if we give everyone the answers and they have to come up with the questions? So it was actually a response to the quiz show scandal.
Wow.
And the other part that's fascinating about this that I actually want to listen to sometime or find is the rules in California about game shows are very strict and lengthy. And before you are a contestant on a game show, you have to listen to like a 90-minute briefing on the rules of the game show.
So do you watch Nailed It?
Absolutely. It's my daughter's favorite show. So if Nicole Byer ever listens to this, my daughter loves you.
Yes. So this is now, I'm 2 for 2 and talking about Nicole Byer and Paul Scheer in my interviews. But when Paul Scheer competed on Nailed It, he later talked about it on a podcast, and Nicole will talk about how a shooting day, like one day of one episode of Nailed It, can take 12 hours to shoot.
Oh,
man. She's like, how, if they're really only being given half an hour and 2 hours to cook, how does it stretch to become 12 hours? So what happens is they do the comedy introduction on like how to cook. They run back to their stations. And then they go to a room and they get the 90-minute explanation of rules for that section. And then they come back to their kitchens and start cooking again. So because it's a real, it's a competition and not just a comedy show, they have those California quiz show, those California game show rules happen there too. So that's how I learned that that was a thing.
Yeah. That makes complete sense. The other thing in watching Nailed It, if we could just digress it, because Nailed It is a game show, okay?
It is a game show.
And a very good one, too. Because one of the aspects in my Venn diagram, I also say personnel is key.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean both the presenter, the host, and also the announcer.
Yep.
Because I think one of the things is instinctively they used two of the gentlemen who made almost every game show on this list, or a lot of them. Well, Merv Griffin is one. He made Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. So he is the Duke of game shows. But I think the king of game shows is a man, Mark Goodson. And we're going to get to a bunch of his game shows in a second, like Match Game. You're familiar with Match Game? And the announcer who I walk around the house imitating is Johnny Olson, who was the original host announcer on Price is Right. And he's the Match Game announcer. So if you ever, and the reason I think I realize I'm comforted by Johnny Olson's voice is he's from Minnesota. So he has that Midwestern flat affect, but also like pitched up that you and I are very used to, like when our aunts and uncles get excited about something.
Yep.
He goes into that Midwest voice and I'm like, oh, I know that voice. So yes.
So I used to work at a company, a marketing agency called Olson. And we named all of our conference rooms in the Chicago office after Match Game celebrity panelists.
Awesome.
So we had our, it was like, are we going to meet in Richard Dawson or Betty White? And we had a Charles Nelson Reilly. We had a Nipsey Russell. And so all of our conference rooms, except for the formal boardroom, were named for Match Game celebrity panelists.
So what did Johnny Olson have a connection to that agency then?
Now I want to look it up because the founder of Olson, his name was John Olson. So, and he was from Minnesota. Like the headquarters were in Minneapolis. So I would say it's but I also think Olson is probably the Minnesota Smith.
Yeah. But still, that's too much of a coincidence there.
Yeah.
So interesting. One of the things, because my nostalgia is the three game shows, and one of them is Match Game, right? Richard Dawson, who is most famous for being the host of Family Feud, got the job as host of Family Feud because he was so good on Match Game.
I believe it.
That's why he was made, because he was a minor, if you remember Hogan's Heroes, to quote from another podcast, a TV show that could never be made today because they're in a Nazi prisoner of war camp. He was just like a minor actor. He was, what, fourth or fifth billed on that show. So he was one of the lower panelists. Yeah. And they rotated through, and then he became so good on that. And then one of the other personnel people on the game Concentration is Betty White's husband, Alan Ludden.
Oh,
so you will see her show up, because one of the other personnel things you want is where you have guests. You want guests who are both really good at the game that you're playing and also really good at interacting and playing with it.
Jason, do you think now is a good time for you to maybe describe your whole Venn diagram of what goes into a good game show?
Sure. We covered a lot of it. So, okay. So one is it needs to be good gameplay, right? The game has, and by that I mean, you coming from advertising or having some background in it, an elevator pitch. I need to be able to explain the game to you in 30 seconds, right? There's a current game show on, and as much as I love Dax Shepard and would want to hang out with him, the rules to the game show he hosts are so convoluted that I cannot follow them along, and it turns me off, right? So gameplay also, there should be, you need to be able to play along. And we talked about returning contestants.
Yep.
And this is the part that I hit upon here is you need to build to the best part of the game show. The best part of the game show needs to go last. All right. So in Jeopardy, it builds to Final Jeopardy. And the cool thing about Final Jeopardy, which makes it the best part, is the betting aspect, right? So you have to, like, because people are playing heads up now against one another. So do you remember the game show Supermarket Sweep?
Of course I do.
Okay. So that's been one of my nostalgia watches. And that's the game show. And they were supposed to bring it back pre-quarantine with Leslie Jones as the host.
I would watch that in a second. As soon as it's safe to go into a grocery store and willy-nilly touch everything, I think right now it would be...
Yeah, that's true.
A little anxiety-producing.
I may have gone through a grocery store once and just like, hey, I'm going to throw five hams into this basket to see what it's like. But, you know, boring days of being a nerdy high school kid. Okay. So Supermarket Sweep is a bad game show.
All right.
Because it doesn't build to the best part. No one remembers, or hardly anyone remembers, that The best part is the people. So for those of you, the listeners who haven't seen it, there is a part of the game show. You play these mini like quiz games to build time. And then the people, there are three teams. One person from each team of two goes out at the same time during the time and runs through the supermarket, throwing stuff in their baskets and trying to accumulate the most dollar value. Right. So it's anarchy in a grocery store.
Yeah.
And it's great. And it's great. It's so much fun to watch. Right. And then you like the play along aspect is you're yelling at the TV like, no, go to the meat department. Why are you doing that?
Right? Go to the meat department, get diapers, get formula.
Yes. Yes. But at the end of the game show, the team who has the highest total, they then do this like clue game where they have to find three products in the store and each product has the next clue on it. So it's like a treasure hunt. And then the last one is $5,000, right? And yeah, that's not the best part of the game. So I said, like, that's why Supermarket Sweep, they should build. So Leslie Jones, a producer of her game show, I would say, get rid of that last part and just build to the sweep, because that's what people want to see. And I would also tell them, back to my thing about returning people, they should have people defend their title, right? I mean, because that's, I think that's the part that you want. So
or
that's
you keep $5,000 scavenger hunt through the store, but you turn it into another way to get time. So you get the, because the racing around the store looking for things is exciting. So you swap it. So the sweep is the finale, but the time building becomes quizzes and then the scavenger hunt.
Absolutely. Well, I would also say that the running around the store, the throwing things in the cart part is the fun part. Like, you know, watching people like, so this show was filmed in the early 90s, late 80s, right? That was the time aspect. So most of the people going on Supermarket Sweep are women. So like watching like petite house. We also should talk about the patriarchal dynamics of game shows that I've noticed too. Like, it's really funny to watch something from the 60s and the 70s. They'll ask the men what they do for a living.
Right.
And the women, they'll ask them like if they're married and what their husband does.
Right.
And also the way that I shouldn't say all the men, because we're going to talk about somebody who is dead and has a bad reputation for not being the nicest person. But impress me, all the men will kiss the women.
Yeah, just right on the mouth. Oh, I might have lost you, Jason.
But the person who has it in my ear. Hello?
All right, you're back, yeah.
Okay. So Jerry Lewis had a reputation for not being the nicest person, right? Hey, I don't know if you've ever heard.
Jerry Lee Lewis, the piano player?
No, Jerry Lewis, the comedian.
Oh, yes. Yep, got him in my head. Yep.
Okay. So
the telethon.
Yes.
Okay.
So watching the 60s concentration, though, which is a game show, female contestant comes out, young female contestant. Jerry Lewis shakes her hand graciously, says it's a pleasure to meet you, and then sits down. Doesn't do the mawing and pawing that all the other men do or kissing. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. So then another female contestant comes out. He does the same thing. And I'm like, huh, Jerry Lewis, might have been actually kind of a gentleman for his day. So good for him.
Interesting. So was he a host or a celebrity guest on Concert?
He was a celebrity guest.
All right.
It was Jerry Lewis and Audrey Meadows from the Honeymooners. It was a real celebrity. They used to have.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, one of the joys of watching 70s game shows is also Googling who the heck is this person.
Right.
Like on Match Game, because you have Charles Nelson Reilly, Brett Summers, and the aforementioned Richard Dawson is the regular. And then you have these other rotating people through. So,
yeah.
Another regular was Fanny Flagg, who wrote Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yep. We have a flag room.
Yeah, which is a seminal movie from the early 90s that I'm sure a lot of people watched.
There is, right. My sister still lives in central Illinois, outside of Bloomington Normal, and there's a Towanda Road. And that every time I hit that road, I yell, "Towanda!" from Fried Green Tomatoes in my head, because it would embarrass my nephews to say it out loud.
Anything you do to embarrass kids, that's the best part of having kids in your life. All right. So one other thing I figured out doing this about game shows in the Venn diagram that we haven't hit upon yet is the stakes, what you're playing for. All right. And I figured out that I think there's a Goldilocks zone where it's the perfect amount of money, so the stakes are high enough so you're happy when the person wins. But they can't be so high that you feel devastated when they lose. So this Dax Shepard game, and I don't remember the name of it. My wife
watched
it.
I think it's called like The Very Big Wheel or Giant Wheel. It's a wheel that's like 100 feet tall or something.
Right. And people will bank millions of dollars and then they'll lose it.
Ugh.
And I'm like, yeah, the drama's there, but that's not enjoyable to me, right? And I think if I were crafting the perfect game show, I would want people to win less money more often, right? And I think Match Game hits this perfectly, because Match Game has the final part on Match Game, the big game on Match Game is they'll ask a question and it'll be like, Christopher Blank, right? And they've surveyed the 100 people like on Family Feud and put the top three answers up there. And the bottom one's worth 100, the middle one's worth 250, and the top one's worth 500.
Mm-hmm.
And then the contestant gets to ask each of the celebrities, three celebrities for an answer. And then he or she can go out on their own or use one of those, right? And then, so like Christopher, what would you say for Christopher? What would you say?
Columbus.
Okay, that was the number one answer, right? So if you match that, then you go to the next stage where 10 times that amount, if you match one of the celebrities, you win that. So they win $5,000, right, for matching. And going back to the inflation calculator, that's about $22,000 in today's money.
Which is $22,000 is a number that would improve my life, but not leave me like I'm in a place of privilege. I recognize that, but $22,000 would make a difference, but losing it, it wouldn't destroy my heart.
Right. So I conceptualize that is that's a nice down payment on a home in the Midwest.
Yep.
Okay. Or my friend put it, she must have expensive taste in cars because she said that's half a car. And I'm like, both of those ways are nice ways of putting it. Right? You're like, when you think about like if you lost that amount of money, you wouldn't be like those people losing millions of dollars. And then there's an element where a family member has to agree with you. Like if I was the one who screwed a family member out of millions of dollars,
right?
That's not joy. I mean, game shows need to be nothing but pure, unmitigated joy. To me, this is not joy, right? You know. So yeah. So that's my last. That's the last part of it. Is the Venn diagram is fun. You know, the game show has to be fun. You know,
So just let's go through the bullet points. There's gameplay,
the stakes, so the Goldilocks zone that we just talked about, fun, and then personnel, what we talked about earlier, like the talent involved, both the celebrities, right? And I will say, some people might say, well, I don't find Jeopardy very fun, right? And I'll be like, okay, so it's not for you. But you fun and talent can also go off. Like watching people who are super talented at something
yeah.
can also balance out the fun aspect.
Totally. So,
like, there's a game show on History Network called Forged in Fire.
Oh, where they make knives. Forged in Fire.
It's so great. It's
so good.
And it's like, there's no, like, play-along aspect, because I can't be like, oh, well, this is how I would make a knife out of that. But it's the talent of watching these craftspeople do their, you're just mesmerized, and it's so great. Yeah. My daughter and I went down a rabbit hole and, you know, of watching that for a while. So yeah, that's a great show too.
Great show of like good stakes of taking people who are working in community forges or backyard forges and putting them in like a state of the art kitchen.
Yes.
Forging.
And I also would say that, like, because some, you know, there's a blend between game show and reality TV. There isn't, I'm going to do this pun intentionally, cutthroat competition in it. Maybe they upped it in the later seasons because to keep retained viewers. But those first few seasons, it would be like, well, sorry, Charlie, you had to go home because your knife didn't meet the cut. And they'd be like, I completely understand.
Right.
And they would just like, and they would interview him and be like, it was a privilege to be here, you know? And I'm like, okay, that's great. You know, there's none of this like, you know, smack talking and just nastiness. It's just like a celebration of talented people doing cool stuff.
Yeah. You know? I would say it had some of the same spirit of Great British Bake Off.
Absolutely. Yes.
Kindness. People wanted to see each other succeed. They knew that they were in the forge with other people of their level or in the tent with other home cooks and the best in the country. And they wanted to see each other succeed. So there's a real camaraderie versus everything else bad about reality TV.
So the next part of the map, I labeled 80s nighttime syndicated.
Okay.
So in St. Louis, the remake of Hollywood Squares was on at 10:30 at night.
Wow.
So I would lay in bed at night. Thank you, Mom and Dad. And
oh, you had a TV in your bedroom?
My grandmother would go to bingo every week. And one of the pieces was a small, like 12-inch black and white television.
You buy this game show obsession, honestly.
Yes. And it's in my genes, isn't it?
Yeah.
So in order from oldest to youngest, as she won the televisions, which she seemed to do every month, you would get one of these TVs. So Hollywood Squares, for those of you who don't know, is standard tic-tac-toe, but it was a giant set, like three stories high, and they would ask, there'd be a celebrity in each of the squares, and they would ask the celebrity a question, and you had to agree or disagree with the celebrity's answer, and when you got tic-tac-toe, you won the game. So, trying to remember, the biggest celebrity of the time was a guy who was on a syndicated show called Too Close for Comfort, Jim J. Bullock.
Yeah.
He was probably the biggest one. And they did bring it back, and I never watched it, with Whoopi Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but yeah. And then that was hosted by John Davidson. He was the host of that. You know, again, there's a little bit of
Jack Blair was on it regularly.
Oh yes, very good. I remember watching Gilbert Gottfried on there. He was on there a lot.
That sounds about right.
And then the announcer was Shadow Stevens, who had this very like late night radio show host voice. Yeah. So that was a very good game show. And then also in the 80s, I went to the 80s kids shows.
Oh wait. Gypsy Rose Lee was on 114 episodes of Hollywood Squares. Like Gypsy from the musical Gypsy.
That has to be, there was a 1960s one.
Oh,
that has to be one.
Yeah.
And Paul Lynn very famously was the center square.
Yeah.
On that version. So we also like, also we should get into, if there's any American studies majors listening that will be giving out doctoral dissertation topics now about the role of gay men in game shows.
Yeah.
They were celebrated for who they were. Paul Lynde, Hollywood Squares, the aforementioned Charles Nelson Reilly from Match Game. You know, these were places where, you know, they're, you know, what was the code word back in the day? Single bachelor, life committed bachelor. Yeah, committed bachelor lifestyle was celebrated and appreciated on game shows. Because, and those of you who have not watched the 70s Match Game, like the double entendre and everything, it's dripping with veiled sexuality. And also apparently on both Match Game and the six, I don't know if they could do it in the 80s Hollywood Squares, but the 60s Hollywood Squares and the Match Game in the 70s, they would film five shows in one day.
Right. And they would just get more and more intoxicated.
Shockered. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, so you can tell, legendarily, you can tell a Friday show based on how, on like what's going on. So I also like to play, there's a lot of side games I like to play while watching these. You can play, can you catch one of them drinking? And every now and then, and mostly it's Charles Nelson Reilly or Brett Summers, you will see one of them like quickly sip a drink from whatever is under the table and it's the bats. So I do want to talk about one 80s kids game show. We'll skip over Double Dare. Because Double Dare was great. That's the one in Nickelodeon's heyday where they slime people. But talking about hacking game shows, there is a game show, and I'd be interested if you and your sister watched this and figured this out like my brother and me. Do you remember I'm Telling?
No.
DC? Okay. I'm Telling, the newlywed game, right? Where they have newly married couples and they send one partner off and they ask the other one a question and see if you can match. I'm Telling is the sibling equivalent of the newlywed game. Okay. So my brother and I were like, hey, if we ever get on this game show is so easy to beat. If they ask a color, the answer is blue. If they ask for a number, it's four. If the answer is which one of us, it's always me.
Yeah.
Because that was like 60% of the questions. But the best, and I bring it up because this is a great end of the game, you know, end game. So the brother or sister or combination that won got to run this basketball size elevated platform series. So ramps up and down. It looked kind of like a skate park littered with prizes. All right.
Right.
And each of the prizes had the classic red plunger button you would press, like the, what was the, Staples?
Yeah.
Is that the one who has the easy button?
Yeah.
Right. So more modern thing. But each of the prizes were numbered. And you'd have to hit, maybe there's 20 of them in there, and you had to match every prize you matched with your brother or sister. You got to keep.
Right.
Right. If you matched all eight prizes, you got all 20 of the prizes.
Yeah.
So being smart aleck kids, my brother and me were like, well, if we were getting the game show, just pick the first eight prizes. Go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
And those way we would get all 20. So that was just an obscure game show as I was mapping this that I thought of. So I thought,
yeah. So when I Google image search, I definitely recognize the finale kind of prize optical course like that. I recognize.
Yeah. We, I'm guessing.
Well, it ran, we were 10, 11. It ran from September, 1987 to March, 1988. So
1 year.
Yeah.
And it had that big of an impact on me. Wow. So we were 10 and 11, you said?
Yeah.
If you add 6 to the grade that you're in.
Oh, was that your age?
That's the age you turn.
Oh. So,
example, 12th grade, senior year of high school, right?
12 plus 6.
At 6, you turned 18. This works for me and you because.
So you've got 80s syndicated, 80s kids. What else have you got on that map?
What else do I have? The 2000s, and I wrote 2000s extreme underlined. Because you remember how extreme in the 2000s was a marketing strategy? And here I put Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, right? Which was a phenomenon. And Deal or No Deal, which is, again, just a basic game show. And the construct is a basic game show, but they just up the stakes. And Deal or No Deal is on in syndication, and I tried rewatching it, and it's not really rewatchable. And I think it's because it's a gimmick. It's not actually good gameplay.
Right. And that is a game that puts the patriarchy on full display, literally. It has a Meghan Markle or a Chrissy Teigen on the
Chrissy Teigen was one?
She tweeted about it or put it on Instagram this week with the face that she would make. And she was like, I didn't look sad enough for people. So they replaced me.
Oh, I didn't know her. I knew Meghan Markle famously. Yeah. Yeah. So those of you who don't know what we're talking about, there are 28 briefcases, like the silver, like Bond villain briefcase. And with models in various lengths of short to shorter skirts and dresses, all dressed identical, right?
Like a Robert Plummer video.
Yeah, which was kind of gross. They would people would select the cases, and then the goal of winning $1 million, but people would walk out with, I don't know, anywhere from nothing to maybe around $150,000. So, but it was a lot of like, moments more than yay moments. Yeah. Right?
And you're just guessing briefcases.
Right. Where millionaire, I mean, it was watching people who knew things, right? So I have to ask you, nerd, because I forgot to tell my other great Leah Jerram story that I always think of, is how we once were really cool. So do you know the question that the first $1 million was won on?
The question that the first $1 million was won on?
On Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Do you remember, you know the question?
I don't know the question, but if you think it's a Leah Jones story, possibly the answer has to do with Wilco.
You're warm. It's not Wilco.
It's either a Jeff Tweedy music story, the band Uncle Tupelo, which you tried to get to Common, but we had They Might Be Giants instead.
It's a They Might Be Giants question.
They Might Be Giants question. See, I knew it.
So how far away from the Earth is the sun?
Oh, I am not going to have that lyric recall.
Approximately 93 million miles away. And that's why it seems so small. So we talked a little bit about these is the now, the nostalgia. And I've been watching this. I was joking with you that you need to get Pluto TV to sponsor you, because I was up on this before they started their ad campaign, because these channels appeared on my TV about 8 months ago. And for those that understand this reference, they're like the UHF channels of lore, of yesterday, where they're incredibly, there's 100 of them approximately, and they're super niche. Like, you'll appreciate this. Yesterday, I watched The Real World London for an entire day. Because there's just a channel dedicated to the real world.
Amazing.
And I'm like, And I'm like, this is great. So the one though I always go back to is the Game Show Channel, and that's why we're talking about these.
So now is this the, like, I know that there's the Game Show Channel, or is this the Pluto TV channel of syndicated game shows?
This is the Pluto TV channel of syndicated game shows. There's two. There's one called Buzzer, which is the one I watch, which is 70s, 80s, and 90s. And then there's another one, which is like 2000 game shows, which I do not watch because why would you when you have the classics, right? And so really there's five that I watch on this. Some of we've already talked about, like we talked about Supermarket Sweep, which we have, my daughter and I have it down to the exact moment the commercial is going to come back so we can watch the big sweep. And we've, so like at 24 minutes past the hour, you can turn on when it's on and you, the guy will be going through the instructions of the big sweep. David Ruprecht.
So you guys actually are really embracing terrestrial TV instead of like, you're just like letting the channel play or coming to it. This is, these are some 1980s skills. You're putting to play. Some strong Gen X skills.
Yeah. So we were talking about this on a Zoom call with my friends from home, like family and friends. And my friend Doug, who's the one I jumped out of a plane with, like, I don't know if you remember that story where I screwed that up. He said, he put it this way, and I think this makes complete sense. So credit to Doug Mills. He said, there's something about being served, right? And I was like, yeah, you're right, because I was trying to break this down because Shawshank Redemption is on Netflix. They put it up last month. And I've sat like flipping channels and probably watched Shawshank Redemption hundreds of times, but I've never gone and just sat down and turned it on Netflix. There's something about in our Gen X brain, as you put it, about just watching what's on. You don't have to make any choices. It's great. It's just kind of there. So I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll watch that.
And then that's like something I only experienced today in a hotel. Like, a hotel is the only place I flip channels, or I'm just like, I guess I'm going to watch this channel for a while.
That's why I will plug Pluto TV. It is fantastic. It's free. And you're going to email me and be like, because I previously mentioned my roommate, Andrew Myricord, and his wife, our friend Denise. I told them about this. And he texts me and he's like, yeah, I just spent 3 hours watching the Bob Ross channel. This is great. So nothing but a channel like old Bob Ross shows. And I'm like, yes, everybody finds something. So yeah, so the game show, it's called Buzzer TV. And the five that I really watch, we talked about Supermarket Sweep. We talked about Match Game. Although I'm leaning a little bit on Match Game. It's still a great show, but it's the gameplay is a little repetitive, right? So then the game show that my wife and I discovered that we're terrible at is called Concentration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I remember, but I assume it's, you have to memorize things or concentrate.
Both. Good call. Okay. We're going to get an okay Gen Xer here in a minute,
yeah.
But, do you remember when we were kids, did you and Rain have the memory game?
Of course.
Okay. So concentration is memory on a board, but behind each of the, and it's a 30 tile board, but instead of pictures like was on the memory game, there are prizes.
Okay.
Or bonuses, and the bonuses are like wild card or take one gift. But the tiles, when you match them, are turning around to reveal, they're called rebus puzzles.
Yeah.
They're like the pictogram, like where it'll be like an or, the picture of an or, plus a ship. So it'll be like our ship. And then you have to figure out like what the thing says.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. We are terrible at the rebus puzzles.
Oh.
And the only answer I can give is that like Price is Right and A Guy Who Memorized Things, there are certain pictures that they use repetitively.
Yep.
So the game rewards viewership. It's aspirational in a way. So like the thought is, if I watch enough of this, one day I can get on here and I can win, which I think goes back to the fun aspect of the game show. I think it's great because, you know, you want people watching. And so and then again, it's really low stakes, you know, people who win, and the prizes are great. I mean, it's not like, you know, we really had, like, people think the prizes is what brings viewers in. Like, one of them is a year's supply of home perms. A year's supply of cat food. But my favorite, and if I ever get in charge of a game show, I'm bringing this back. And this is what I love. And this is where the history nerd and getting out the Google, and breaking into Google and an inflation calculator. There will be a special game where all the prizes are foreign currency.
Ooh.
So it's like 100 Deutschmarks. So right. I have to play like, all right, what year is this? And how much was 100 Deutschmarks in 1981? The end on the modern one, because they brought it back with Alex Trebek, the god of, you know, game show hosting, is the same game at the end, but behind the puzzles are 8 types of cars that are lined up showroom style behind the person. So if they can match all 8 of those tiles in 45 seconds, they win their choice of the car.
Yep.
So that's great. And then if you keep winning, when you come back to play that game again, they knock 5 seconds off. Or they give you an extra 5 seconds. So you get more time in order to try to win the car. So keep winning is rewarded.
So Jason, we are coming to the end of our interview. This has been a blast.
Yeah, it's been fun. Yeah, when you asked me to be on this, when you actually did your initial map, you mapped out, I don't know if you told the listeners this in your first episode, but you mapped out all of your podcast fandom.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed that you could do that, just like the memory of what links to what, that I did one based on that. But we went in a different direction because it would just be you and I talking about the same things we love on podcasts. So
right.
I was like, can I talk about game shows? Because that's what I've been really into as of late. And you're like, absolutely. Yeah. So
absolutely. Yeah.
It's been fun. This is the first podcast I've been on. And like I said, I'm honored that you allowed me to do this. It's been great.
It was super fun. So is there anything that you would like to promote?
I feel like Jason Mantzoukas at the end of every How Did This Get Made? Because I don't have anything to plug. So let's plug Happy Endings. Yeah, that's a great show.
Pluto TV.
Yeah, Pluto TV, Send Me Something. Love you guys and gals. Yeah. It's the best. I would watch game shows. I would also like to promote Staying the Hell Home.
Yes.
Because, we're all going crazy. We all are tired of being trapped inside with the people we are or by ourselves. That may be even worse with your own mind. But, you know, this thing's not done here at the end of May. So stay the hell home for the people who are fighting this or for the people who don't have who are immunocompromised and won't be able to fight this. You know, I also think this is a great time. Like, I haven't talked to you in years. I hadn't talked to people from Milliken in years. You know, it's a good time. We have all this time. It's a perfect time to slow down and do stuff, but also take, you know, be aware that, you know, if you don't feel like doing something today, it's not you, it's this thing. So.
Right. It's the part where we're living through a global trauma.
And I would also promote voting.
Yes.
That just came to my head, being, you know, working as I do in politics and Jace with the teachers union. So, you know, I don't care. Well, I do care. I have a preference, but I'm not going to give it here. But just get an absentee ballot now, because you don't have to be out there.
Check your registration, get an absentee ballot.
Yeah, I got to do that today. So, yeah. And, one last thing, my daughter's going to be 10 here in a few weeks, and I made this list of things that she should try to do each day. We failed because, you know, we're in the middle of a global pandemic. But one of the things that I put on there was, be social. So, like, reach out to people that you haven't talked to, in a long time. You don't know how much that will actually make you feel good and cheer up. And, you know, I have anxiety. So sometimes I'm like, that person doesn't want to hear from me. It's always nice to be thought of.
So, Jason, thank you so much. This was wonderful. And I will see you online.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.